From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. One of the most enduring collective questions in contemporary America is how we ended up with a president who thrives on hate, denigration, and bullying. The answer lies, of course, in the fact that there is a significant proportion of the electorate that identifies with Donald Trump's moral standards, have catapulted him to power, and are determined to keep him there. Today, we turn to a psychologist who explores an idea that she calls powerarchy, a widespread invisible belief system based on a hierarchy of moral worth that consider some groups or individuals as having higher moral worth than others. Understanding that belief system can be critical to social transformation. Melanie Joy is a Harvard-educated psychologist and international speaker. She was a lecturer at the University of Massachusetts in Boston and is the best-selling author of Why We Love Dogs, Eat Pigs, and Wear Cows. She joins me to discuss her new book, Powerarchy, Understanding the Psychology of Oppression for Social Transformation. Welcome to the program, Melanie.
Hi, thank you so much for having me, Sonali.
Did you write this book because we are living in the times that we are living in? Or is this an avenue of study in psychology that you have always wanted to pursue and have been pursuing?
I think the answer is a combination of both. I'm a longtime advocate. I've been very active in social justice, animal rights, environmental protection. And I've always been, you know, very concerned with issues of justice and really curious about how it's possible for, you know, people to turn away from atrocities, essentially, or enable atrocities. Even many, many people who are very well-intentioned, who share the same core moral values of compassion or caring and justice, to nevertheless support widespread injustices. So I really have felt that looking to the core, like really looking at what the psychology is that's driving these dysfunctional processes, could be really helpful in suggesting ways to transform them.
So when you talk about powerarchy, this hierarchy of moral worth, are you referring to, for example, how the in the United States today we have a right wing, very conservative sector of society that, for example, will refer to undocumented immigrants as illegals and essentially assume or accept that they deserve any measure of cruelty and every measure of cruelty that the U.S. throws at them because they are quote-unquote illegals? Is that one example of that kind of powerarchy?
It is. Why don't I explain what powerarchy is and what it looks like, and then we can unpack it a little bit. But yes, that's absolutely one example of how powerarchy manifests itself. So powerarchy is the belief system that teaches us to see certain individuals or groups as more worthy of moral consideration than others. That means as more worthy of being treated with integrity, compassion, and justice, being treated with respect, essentially. And the system is structured to maintain and often grow unjust power imbalances. The system is also what I call non-relational in that it conditions us to engage in non-relational behaviors, relationally dysfunctional behaviors. These are behaviors that cause us to violate our integrity and that harm the dignity of others and therefore lead to disconnection between us. So, one way, maybe the best way to really understand powerarchy is to think about what it looks like in your own life. So for example, try to think of a relationship in your life that you would consider a great relationship or a very good relationship. And think about your feeling of connection in that relationship. Chances are you feel connected with this other individual. And if you think about your sense of dignity in the relationship, chances are you feel that this other individual really perceives and treats you as though you have inherent worth, as though you're a fundamentally worthy being. And probably they practice integrity toward you. They treat you the way they would want to be treated. So probably as well, you feel more empowered to be your better self in this relationship. And now if you think about a relationship that's not a good relationship, that's a bad relationship, actually, maybe it's a relationship that's already ended, or it's just with somebody you've met online or like an online troll, you might notice that you probably have exactly the opposite experience. Instead of feeling connected, you feel disconnected. Instead of feeling that your dignity is honored, you feel that you're treated and seen as less worthy than, your dignity is harmed. Instead of feeling that the other treats you with integrity, with respect, you feel that they violate their integrity in the way that they treat you. And probably you struggle to be your better self. You might even find yourself saying, I don't even like who I am in this relationship. So each of these relationships falls on a different side of the relational spectrum. One of them is what I would call a powerarchy. Okay, this is a powerarchical system or relationship. And the other one is a healthy, functional relationship. Now, relationships are systems of two people. We're all parts of multiple systems, right? So a system can be as small as two people, or it can be the size of a workplace, or it can be as large as a social system. Powerarchies are systems that are organized around this relational dysfunction. So a powerarchy can be a system such as racism or sexism or speciesism, or it can be a dysfunctional workplace, work culture, or it can be an abusive relationship. The thing to keep in mind is that every system, powerarchy, these systems all have the same basic structure. They lead to the same basic outcomes, the sense of disconnection and disempowerment. And all of these systems stem from the very same mentality. That's what I call the powerarchical mentality, that's organized around this belief in a hierarchy of moral worth, that some individuals or groups are more worthy of being treated with respect, essentially with integrity, than others.
So where does that come from then? Why is it that some people develop those belief systems and others not so much?
Well, I mean, powerarchy is a dominant system, right? So we're all born into the dominant system of powerarchy. It's very, very much normalized. The question of where it comes from is an interesting one. I mean, in some ways, we are hardwired to react instinctively to threats, to perceived threats. We automatically become, defensive, and we place our interests above the interests of others. That's what we've needed to do to survive to some degree. We are also social animals, and we need to behave in pro-social ways in order to maintain our, we've needed to do this in order to survive, for the survival of the species. Today, however, many of these antisocial behaviors that I've described they're learned behaviors. Part of the problem is simply that we haven't developed what I call relational literacy. Relational literacy is the ability to understand and practice healthy ways of relating, or I should say the understanding of an ability to practice healthy ways of relating. In many ways, we're really still living in the relational dark ages. I mean, most of us have to learn complicated geometry that we'll probably never need to use, and yet we don't get a single formal lesson in how to be healthy relational beings. And when you look at some of the most pressing problems facing the world today, these are not problems that are caused by people who don't know how to do geometry. So we just have not been really educated in how to operate in a relationally functional way. The information is, of course, out there, but most of us haven't been exposed to it. So we're sort of living in relational dark ages.
If these are learned behaviors, then do you see things like school bullying in the classroom as part of the spectrum of where powerarchy develops?
Oh, absolutely. And that's actually a really good example of powerarchy in action. You know, powerarchy is organized around a model of power, where called power over, whereby we learn to derive our sense of power and often our sense of self-worth from wielding power over others or from taking power from others. And so we do learn these behaviors. And as I said, you know, these are also evolutionary behaviors where, when we are under threat, we often have to react automatically. But the problem of oppression and abuse, you know, all of these systems are based on the same mentality, the same set of the same types of relational dynamics, is one in which we have been conditioned to think and act a certain way. And we haven't been conditioned to really, we haven't really learned how to think in a pro-relational or a way that's relationally healthy. One of the reasons I think that we, are still not having this conversation as widely as we might is because we just typically haven't looked at oppression through the lens of psychology. And often when we talk about oppression, we look at oppression through the lens of politics or economics or philosophy or ideology. And of course, these lenses matter. But we also need to look at oppression through the lens of psychology, and particularly through the lens of relationships, because on a deeper level, oppression is a relational phenomenon. It reflects and reinforces relational dysfunction. That's a dysfunction or a problem in how we relate as social groups, interpersonally, to other animals, to the environment, and even sometimes to ourselves.
So is that because do we avoid looking at it through the lens of psychology because there's a fear that you might try to justify someone's behavior or excuse it?
I don't know the answer to that question. And I don't know if it's actually an act of avoidance. I think it's just that, you know, the whole conversation, awareness of oppression, is really relatively new. The conversation about oppression, the conversations that we're having today, are relatively new. So I think just in terms of the evolution of our thinking, you know, we're now at a point where we really have done, I think, a fairly good job of identifying, for example, privilege and the defensiveness that comes with privilege and white privilege and male privilege, and really starting to have these conversations in a robust enough way. So I think that we, just in general, the way that our education system is structured and many education systems in the world, we tend to focus on subjects that have less to do with relational health or psychology than we do on other subjects. It's just not something that most of us have been exposed to.
One of the things that is often said about someone like President Trump is that he's shameless, that he will fall to depths that we just don't expect him to fall to, in the way in which he particularly, abuses individuals through name calling. That idea of shame is one that you explore in your book. Can you use Trump as an example to help us understand that psychology?
Well, Trump is really an outlier. So I don't know how I can use him as an example of shaming behavior, for sure. But he's really an outlier. And most people are not, quote unquote, shameless. I don't know what his experience of shame is, to be honest. But what I talk about in my book, and let me back up, it's absolutely true that Trump is modeling and normalizing, you know, these very toxic, powerarchical attitudes and behaviors. There's
no
question
about. And doesn't
he
influence his followers when he does that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. He influences everyone when he does that. Studies have shown that powerarchy is contagious. So that when we use powerarchy, when we engage in powerarchical behaviors, these are behaviors that harm others' dignity or that are otherwise just disrespectful, that we are more likely to see these behaviors reproduce. So, for example, if you're on the receiving end of a powerarchical behavior, you're much more likely to respond in like kind to that individual And whether you do or not, you're also more likely to reproduce these behaviors later on in the day toward other people. So powerarchical behaviors are absolutely contagious. And one of the things that's happening is that Trump is spreading these, you know, spreading this contagion through all of the airwaves, essentially, and not only normalizing this behavior, but he's feeding the powerarchical mentality itself. The powerarchical mentality, as I said, it's organized. It's based on this belief that some are more worthy, morally worthy than others. Some are, quote unquote, better than others. And one of the hallmarks of, or two, I should say two of the hallmarks of the powerarchical mentality are the emotions of contempt and shame. These are two sides of the powerarchical coin, basically. When we feel contempt, that means we've placed ourselves in a position of moral superiority. And when we feel shame, that means we feel that we are in a position, we perceive ourselves in a position of moral inferiority. And these are, you know, both of these emotions only exist in relationship, in comparison, when we're comparing ourselves to another, for example, or even when we're comparing ourselves to an idealized or demonized version of ourselves. The antidote to both of them is empathy. And what Trump does is he feeds this mentality. He's literally feeding the contempt of the powerarchical, well, that's a hallmark of the powerarchical mentality, and also the shame that results from contempt. When somebody treats us or interacts with us, for example, in a way that shows they perceive us as inferior, morally inferior, often our response is to feel shame when we look at ourselves through their eyes, to feel, experience ourselves as being shamed.
So let's talk about how exploring this psychology can be a path toward transforming our societies, which is the most important question, that understanding this through a psychological lens, how can that take us to a better place?
Well, I think it's very important for us to recognize these problematic dynamics in our world as a reflection of relational dysfunction in the first place, and also to recognize that every interaction that we have, you know, every communication that we're engaged in is an opportunity for us to interrupt a dysfunctional way of relating and replace it with a more functional way of relating. And to do this takes a commitment to pausing and intentionality, to being intentional rather than simply reactive in our communication, in our interactions, to being intentional. That means pausing before we hit send, for example, pausing before we say something and asking ourselves, really, am I connected with my empathy in this moment for this other? How will this other person feel? How might they feel?
It's when hard to have empathy for one's oppressor, though.
You're absolutely right. And sometimes it's not safe to have empathy for one's oppressor.
Right.
So there's a caveat here. We can only feel empathy when we feel safe enough to do so, because people who have been oppressed and who are oppressed actually tend to over-empathize with those in positions of power. So that's a really important point, a really important consideration. However, when we're in a position where we have the privilege of choosing, it's very important for us to ask ourselves and to notice our contempt, to notice when we're feeling contempt, because what's happening now is that some, perhaps many of our attempts to raise awareness about the powerarchy, you know, that is reflected in the Trump administration, for example, are not reaching people in the way they might otherwise reach them. So how do we communicate in a way to increase the chances that our message will be heard as we intend it to be? And if we have contempt when we're communicating, you know, to or about people whose opinions are not the same as our own, we're much less likely to engage them in conversation and to open hearts and minds. We're much more likely to kind of reinforce this polarization that's happening. We also need to be careful with our communication, particularly those of us working for social transformation, because if we don't recognize powerarchy for what it is and the powerarchical mentality for what it is, we can end up using powerarchy to show that powerarchy is wrong. You know, we can end up, for example, speaking out against injustice while doing so in a way that's unjust, that is, you know, shaming or degrading others who don't agree with us.
Yeah. I'm thinking of some of the tensions that sometimes arise within activist groups when, for example, white activists working to end racism end up assuming a position of racial privilege within anti-racist spaces and not even realizing that they're doing that.
Yes, absolutely. If we have to be really vigilant to keep our we have to be vigilant to pay attention to the way hierarchy can manifest itself, and because it will keep on popping up even in our resistance movements. I mean, we really are at risk of cannibalizing ourselves if we don't recognize hierarchy for what it is. Some of the really toxic moral perfectionism and infighting that we see in some social justice spaces now is a reflection of the hierarchical mentality finding another other, finding another way to express itself. I mean, it can be helpful to think of this mentality as sort of as an entity that's taken up residence in your psyche, and it has a survival instinct. It wants to stay alive. And the way it gets you to keep it alive is by convincing you to find a morally inferior other, convincing you to find all sorts of justifications as to why somebody, an individual or a group, is morally inferior. So we really do need to be careful and to become more self-aware so that we don't end up reproducing hierarchy, because hierarchy really is contagious. And to be committed when we're in positions of privilege, to be really committed to, or let me back up to say, to recognize that having power in a hierarchy, which is essentially having privilege in a hierarchy, causes us to feel, as many people are well aware, causes us to automatically feel defensive against any information that would help us get out of the hierarchical box we don't even know we're in. We tend to defend ourselves against attempts to raise awareness of the privilege that we have. And it's important for us to recognize that defensiveness for what it is so that we don't act on it.
Melanie, give out a website where people can find out more about the work you do and about your book as well. Of course, they can get a copy of the book directly, but a website for the book?
Sure. They can go to powerarchy.org and they can download the first chapter of the book for free there as well.
That's powerarchy.org. Melanie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Sonali. It's been a pleasure.
My guest has been Melanie Joy. She's a Harvard-educated psychologist and international speaker and the best-selling author of Why We Love Dogs, Eat Pigs, and Wear Cows. And we've been discussing her newest book called Powerarchy, Understanding the Psychology of Oppression for Social Transformation. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.